Well, as I told you, having eulogized the Catholics in their adulation of the Pope, and having given the Pope nothing but positive coverage in the press, just as soon as he left, I told you they'd be attacking the Protestants, intimidating evangelical Christians in their giving, letting their cynicism and contempt for Protestant preachers dominate the airways. I have nothing against the Catholics. I admire them. You all can sit down. I sure have nothing against the Pope. I think he's one of the best ones in many years. I admire the way they do things. I think it's about time the news media recognized the legitimacy of religious faith and the power of a religious personality to bring forth the best in people. I just think that the one-sided view of the press, that is constant attack, 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 demean, 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 any faith other than the Catholics, doesn't balance with the constant positive portrayal of the Catholic faith. And it isn't as though there aren't things available in the Catholic hierarchy to criticize. They just ignore it. And they take the smallest things in the Protestant frame and try to make it typical of all. Jessica Hahn. She now says she is a better Christian than she's ever been. Having posed for Playboy. Hefner's got a new ministry now. Bared again Christians. Born again Christians are passe. Bared again Christians are... Isn't as though there is purity and purity alone in the records of the Catholic Church. Here's the American Pope. The life and times of Francis Cardinal Spellman. In his 28-year reign as Archbishop of New York, Francis Cardinal Spellman extended the power and influence of the American Catholic Church further and wielded them more forcefully than anyone before or since. Spellman's mark was so great that at his death the Church was said to have become Spellmanized. Bared again Christians, Spellmanized Catholics. When New York's Archbishop Hayes died, Spellman quickly made it clear to Rome that he wanted to run the largest, wealthiest, and most powerful archdiocese in America. Well, I'm all for that. I'd like to do that for our church. Run it, he did, as if it were a major corporation. Spellman raised more money, built more schools, churches, and hospitals than any of his predecessors. His network, already stretching to Washington and Rome, had a never-before-seen effect. From the mayor's office to New York City banks interested in doing business with the Catholic Church, from economic sanctions against Dorothy Schiff's liberal newspaper, the New York Post, to feuds with Cardinal Cushing and Bishop Fulton Sheen, Spellman's power was everywhere. And while he ran the archdiocese, politicians seeking election, President Johnson needing a spokesman in Southeast Asia, the CIA needing an ecclesiastical emissary in Central America, Senator McCarthy eager for a supporter in his war against domestic communism, all made their pilgrimages to the American Pope. Spelman was to his large and admiring public the kindly man whose avowed aim in life was to be a simple parish priest. Oh, you're there. The Chancery staff was amused by Spelman's loving to refer to himself as a simple parish priest. Around the residence, he even wore an old black cassock. It was rusty with age, the kind of dress a village priest might have worn. The irony was lost on no one. Hectic as it was, Spelman loved his life. After decades of doing everyone else's bidding, he was now the man in charge. Everyone deferred to him, and power was a rich reward. Not surprisingly, Spelman wanted to help old friends who had stuck with him along the way. At the lower levels of the ecclesiastical world, there weren't too many of them. Thus, when Harry O'Connor showed up at the residence one day, Spelman was delighted. He introduced the Boston priest to his maids, pretty Irish girls who cleaned and cooked and waited table. Simple parish priest. Then he paraded O'Connor through the parlor with its floor-to-ceiling gold curtains, red velvet chairs, Persian rug, and paintings of past archbishops. Simple parish priest. They strolled into the throne room, where Spelman raced forward and sat on the throne that rose above the other chairs in the second floor parlor, which was used for special formal presentations. There was the dining room with its heavy dark furniture and the archbishop's study decorated with comfortable stuffed chairs and a large fireplace. "What do you want, Harry?" Spelman asked with a satisfied air. O'Connor, who had never shared Spelman's lust for power, replied he wanted nothing. "I have no great ambitions," he replied. "I just want to be a parish priest." As he knew, the answer was bound to irritate Spelman, who in his humbler public moments liked to look wistful and say that all he ever wanted out of life was to be a simple parish priest, implying he had reluctantly assumed the burdens of office that somehow had fallen on his shoulders. But when Harry said that, Spelman shook his head in disgust at O'Connor's reply. "Don't be stupid, Harry," he said. Spelman was to his large and admiring public the kindly man whose avowed aim in life was to be a simple parish priest. In this startling portrait, based in part on Spelman's personal diary and on hundreds of interviews, John Cooney, the author here, shows us the man behind the image and reveals the extent to which power is sought, acquired, used, abused, and lost. Based on interviews with C.A. Tripp, a sex researcher of... the TV evangelist is sex scandal. Baird again, Jessica. Well, here's what this book says. From interviews with C.A. Tripp, a sex researcher, affiliated with Dr. Alfred C. Kinsey of the Institute for Sex Research, March 12, 1982. Interviews with Bruce Veller, president of the Mariposa Educational Foundation, August 3, 1984. An interview with David McWhirter, a psychiatrist and associate professor at the University of California at San Diego School of Medicine, August 2, 1984. And an interview with Philip Nobile, a former seminarian who served as one of Spelman's altar boys, April 2, 1982, and several other sources. That's all there is this to say. For years, rumors abounded about Cardinal Spelman being a homosexual. Hey, I don't care. But they sure made a big deal out of the rumors regarding Jim Baker. Well, I'm really calling for his fairness. I don't really care about Spelman's sex life. I mean, God knows most people need help. You don't bother me. I don't think sex is the unpardonable sin. Have I ever preached that? Sometimes I think it ought to be. I ain't no origin. That early church father who castrated himself so he could be holy. Just think of that. One of the early church fathers. And now it's church doctrine. You can't mutilate yourself. Even to... tie tubes or... render yourself incapable of progeny. Whatever the hell... that process involves. This is not what I'm trying to do. I don't care whether he's homosexual or not. I'm not one of these preachers that condemns people. I'm merely pointing out, if the news media wanted to, there's plenty on the Catholic side of the fence. For years, rumors abounded about Cardinal Spelman being a homosexual. As a result, many felt and continue to feel that Spelman, the public moralist, and boy, he was. All of us, he said, are victims of war, the war of Satan, the war of the flesh. He was a prim and prissy man who was uncomfortable with the subject of sex. He never tolerated off-color jokes or language in his presence, so that even salty Joe Kennedy bit his tongue on occasion. God, what a bore. Yet, for years, rumors abounded about Cardinal Spelman being a homosexual. As a result, many felt and continue to feel that Spelman, the public moralist, may well have been a contradiction of the man of the flesh, American Pope. Numerous priests and others interviewed took his homosexuality for granted. And I just read you the list of interviewees. Others within the church and outside have steadfastly dismissed such claims. Well, so did Jim Baker. And his wife. She said she knew. That's interesting. I don't even want to explore that. Finally, to make an absolute statement about Spellman's sexual activities is to invite an irresolvable debate and to deflect attention from his words and deeds. But without question, Spellman was a rabid public moralist. He ranted against movies, plays, and films that treated sex even lightly, let alone those that exploited sexuality as a major theme. What was perhaps even stranger, Spellman castigated such entertainment without actually seeing many of the productions he condemned. At times, Spellman insisted that others be punished for innocuous sexual fare. And he used the police as his weapon. Predominantly Irish Catholics, they revered any man who sat on the Archbishop's throne. And they responded to Spellman's clarion. Within a day after his self-righteous attack, police barged through the door of the Ambassador Theater at 49th Street and Broadway and served summonses on the manager and producers of Wine, Women, and Song, a relatively tame burlesque show featuring a fan dancer and a comic. The American Pope, Life and Times of Francis Cardinal Spellman. I don't really want him to parade that around. I sort of went by it fast. I just think that the news media is a bunch of hypocrites. They parrot one another, justifying what they're doing to people of any faith other than the Catholic, based on the public's right to know. What in the hell more can they tell us about Jim and Jessica? Even she knew the old story was getting stale. So she bared again. Bared again Christianity. That'll get a crowd. And La Papessa. We left off with her last night after the Pope had died. His eye doctor had embalmed him. Didn't work. Stunk up all the streets and buildings of Rome to her horror. And I'm on her side. And then she found that this eye doctor had taken pictures of her at his bedside and kept a diary of their relationships, and the scandal was causing wild bidding from the press, and the Vatican's powerful connections were rushed into action when the cover-up began. Throngs of mourners lined the ancient Appian Way on the day of the solemn procession from Castel Gandolfo to St. Peter's Square to pay final tribute to Pius, the first pope in more than 100 years to be born in death through the streets of the Eternal City. The purple-clad body was set for all to view in a horse-drawn, glass-enclosed golden hearse. He left in a custom-made Cadillac limousine holding hands with a nun, comes back in a horse-drawn, glass-enclosed golden hearse. Called Going in Style. An escort of 100 police on motorcycles cleared passage as the procession moved slowly on to Rome for great ceremonial masses and burial. 1 million people were paying their last respects, countless numbers on their knees along the roadways, in fields and ditches, and on rooftops. Whole flocks hovered together, weeping at the loss of so great a spiritual leader. Cardinal Tisserand allowed no official place for Pasqualina, his companion of more than 40 years. Sister Pasqualina. Cardinal Tisserand allowed no official place for Pasqualina in the procession and ordered her to remain as inconspicuous as possible throughout the burial ceremonies. Everyone knew that the nun was too uncompromising and unrelenting to permit Tisserand or any churchman to bar her from these final hours with the man she had served and loved for so many years. There was serious consternation over how she was going to react to the cardinal's directive. The great bells of St. Peter's Basilica were tolling the grief of all Rome and of Catholics everywhere when Pasqualina arrived at dusk, looking utterly exhausted. It had been the first time in her nearly 30 years in Rome when no limousine had awaited her. She had been lucky even to find a ride with Vatican domestics in the small, crowded car. And that didn't bother nearly as much as when the car was rerouted out of the procession. Pasqualina was in her 65th year and feeling cranky and frustrated and played out. The debilitating stress that had come from watching Pius die all these many weeks seemed doubly hard now that Tisserand and Galeazzi Lisi, the eye doctor, were acting against her. She attempted to make her way through St. Peter's Square to her quarters in the Papal Palace, only to become all the more frustrated by the dense crowd. There was such a throng kneeling and praying for the repose of the soul of the Holy Father that no room could be found for her to join them. In spite of her sorrow and the overall ache of her body, Pasqualina showed little concern for her own well-being. Her uppermost thought at the moment was to reach Cardinal Spellman, who she had learned had flown on to Rome immediately upon hearing of Pius's death. Spellman had long been one of Pius's closest friends, hers too, the only prelate throughout the Catholic world trusted enough by the Pope and herself to share their private hours. He had risked his reputation with the Sacred College of Cardinals by spiriting her out of a nun's retreat house in Switzerland and into the Papal Palace, where she could live with Pacelli, who had recently been appointed the new Vatican Secretary of State. Who was Jim Baker's partner? What was his name? That co-host that made arrangements? Who? Huh? No. Wesley Fletcher is the guy that set up the deal down in Florida. His co-host. Dortch. Pius had Spellman. Baker had Dortch. It's getting interesting, isn't it? Want me to continue?
Yes, sir.
Don't tell